But as we begin our program, I want to thank Jessa Bonner, International Program Associate with the group Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, and so happy you could make the program tonight, Jessa.
Thanks for having me.
So I know many of our listeners who've kept in touch with this issue are well aware of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. The U.S. and 11 other nations have recently finalized negotiations over that Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement, which is designed to integrate, from what I understand, 40% of the world's annual production of wealth and resources. The TPP will now be subject to debate in the U.S. Congress, but under the terms of fast track with limited time for debate and no amendments allowed to the final treaty, the final vote on the treaty. But, Jessa, maybe as we begin, you can explain what we know, what we don't know about TPP, but more importantly, why your group and a large number of groups that have formed a coalition to defeat Trans-Pacific Partnership, why you are opposed to it.
Sure. Okay, so the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or as we refer to it as the TPP, so as you mentioned, it's a so-called free trade agreement between 12 countries in the Pacific Rim, and we put the free trade in quotes because we think it's actually about much, much more than trade. And it's been in negotiations for about somewhere between 6 to 8 years, kind of depends on when you start the clock, but they've actually, the negotiators and the countries have actually been claiming to be in the end game of negotiations since late 2013, but they really haven't been able to reach an agreement, and in no small part because there's a lot of opposition to the deal. Though a few weeks ago, the 12 negotiating countries did announce that they had reached a deal, as you mentioned, after postponing the end of that specific negotiation a number of times, but it's unclear exactly how final the deal is. We still don't know what's in the text. It hasn't been released, and President Obama has not actually yet announced to Congress of his intent to sign the agreement. But a big part, as I mentioned, of the reason they haven't been able to finish is because there's a lot of opposition to the deal, and a lot of the opposition stems from the fact that even though the TPP is billed as a free trade agreement, it's really about way more than what we think of when we think of typical trade issues such as tariffs and taxes on goods, et cetera. And actually, the vast majority of the TPP's contents really don't have anything to do with trade, and they have implications for a number of really important issues for citizens, such as, for example, the cost of medicines, whether or not the environment is protected, labor issues, food safety, rollback of popular procurement programs, et cetera, among many other things. And it's also, the agreement has also garnered a lot of opposition because it's been negotiated completely in secret, and there's been no access for civil society and the press. And for most of the negotiations, actually, there was no access for members of Congress. Only until very recently have they been able to request to see a specific portion of the text, and then they can go into this reading room and have officials from USTR hand it to them, but they're not allowed to take any notes, and they're not allowed to talk about what they've seen, so it's really is extremely limited and not actually very helpful. But at the same time, there's about 500 of what are known as trade advisors that actually have access to the text in the negotiations. And the vast majority of these trade advisors represent corporate and industry interests. So what we're seeing really is that while civil society is locked out, a lot of representatives from a variety of different corporate interests really have just a lot of access to these negotiations. So that's one major reason of concern from our group, as well as a large number of other groups, including labor unions, environmental groups, faith groups, human rights groups, etc.
Thanks for that rundown, Jessa. Would you address for our listeners some of the concerns that surround pharmaceutical intellectual property and the possibility that we'll see a spike in prices for basic medicines that people need to take?
Sure. So actually, this part of the negotiations, it's known as it's in the intellectual property chapter. The negotiations about the intellectual property chapter have really been have turned out to be the biggest sticking point in the negotiations. And specifically, as you mentioned, the issue of the expansion of monopoly protections for big pharmaceutical companies. And this would actually increase the price of life-saving medicines because it would be expanding the length of patent terms, so basically blocking competition from a generic version of medicines and allowing these big companies to charge, you know, whatever they want. And more specifically, what's been a huge, huge controversy in this agreement is the monopoly periods for biological medicines. So these are medical products that are actually derived from living organisms, and they're what are used to treat cancer. So we're talking about, you know, people who really, really need these medications and concerns about what the price of these life-saving medicines are going to be. And actually, about 2 weeks ago now, I believe, as I mentioned, all of the negotiations are completely secret. We haven't, even though they supposedly have a deal, we haven't been able to see any of the text. So kind of what we do know about what's in this agreement, we have to rely on leaks, a number of leaks from actually WikiLeaks. So about 2 weeks ago, WikiLeaks released what they understand to be the final version of the IP chapter, and there's a lot of very concerning things in there. So, I mean, big pharmaceutical companies were really pushing for extreme monopolies for brand-name drugs. And some countries pushed back, and the big pharmaceutical companies didn't get everything they wanted, but still we're seeing that the rules of this agreement are going to expand the profits of these big pharmaceutical companies, and this is going to be at the expense of access to affordable medicines. And these increased drug prices also undermine other programs that are really important to try to keep medicine prices down in the U.S., such as Medicare, Medicaid, and the Veterans Administration program. I mean, this could mean increased costs for programs like PEPFAR, which is the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, et cetera. So this is, you know, something that we don't typically think of as being part of a trade agreement, and it's really a life or death issue, you know, for a lot of people around the world. So that's definitely been one of the biggest controversies in the TPP.
What is the patent period now in the United States versus what we might see with the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, if it goes into effect?
Mm-hmm. Well, so it's I mean, because we haven't seen the text, it's kind of unclear exactly what it is. There were fighting in the TPP over. I mean, the U.S. was pushing very, very strongly for 12 years, and for other countries. For instance, some of the countries have no patents, so it's huge, huge jump. It's unclear, somewhere between 5 or 8 years, but we haven't seen the text, and so we're not exactly sure what it's going to be. I mean, I think, unfortunately, that kind of thing is not that rare for the United States, but for other countries such as Australia and Peru, it's a huge, huge difference in terms of patent terms.
We're speaking with Jessup Bonner, International Program Associate with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. We're talking about the future of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement, which will come before Congress in not too long. One other overarching issue that's created a lot of controversy within the TPP, Jessa, is the ISDS, the Investor State Dispute Settlement. And I wondered if you talk about how this provision in the TPP would enable corporations around the world to challenge and maybe even overturn health, labor, environmental, consumer protection laws here in the United States.
Sure. So you're right. As you mentioned, the TPP does include this very controversial provision, which is known as Investor State Dispute Settlement. And this provision actually gives foreign corporations the right to sue countries if they pass a law or regulation that the corporation claims could affect their ability to make a future profit. And through this ISDS provision, corporations are able to sue governments outside domestic court systems through these tribunals, which are made up of private attorneys, some of them which rotate between serving on these tribunals and actually bringing cases for corporation against governments. So there's huge conflict of interest issues. The tribunalists are paid by the hour, and this creates incentives to kind of stretch these cases out for years and years. And in these cases, there's no opportunity for appeal, and there's no cap on the amount of money that corporations can actually seek. And this sounds totally crazy, but unfortunately, it's really a lot more than just a hypothetical threat. And the number of these kinds of cases that are happening outside domestic court systems have really been soaring. And actually, under U.S. trade agreements alone, about $3.6 billion taxpayer dollars have been paid out to corporations. In these cases, as you mentioned, they've targeted a variety of really important regulatory issues. For example, they've targeted tobacco regulations, climate, a lot of environmental issues like mining, actually medicines and patents, energy policies, and other really important laws that we rely on. And as you mentioned, given that the TPP represents 40% of the world economy, it's going to greatly expand this provision. So just to give just a couple of very quick examples, for example, there's a company known as Lone Pine, which is a U.S.-based oil and gas company, and they've actually launched a $241 million case against Canada, and they're challenging Quebec's suspension of oil and gas exploration permits for deposits under the St. Lawrence River. In another famous case, Chevron's actually using ISDS to avoid payment of a multi-billion-dollar court system, a multi-billion-dollar court ruling, which was ruled against the company. And so instead, they've kind of turned around and tried to launch this ISDS case. There's a big pharmaceutical company known as Eli Lilly that's launching a $481 million claim against Canada, challenging their Canada's patent standards after the Canadian courts invalidated a patent because they failed to meet the standard for that patent, et cetera. So even though this sounds just like a totally crazy thing, it's something that corporations are already using to kind of go after and attack a lot of really important laws. And under the TPP, it would only be expanded. So it's another very controversial issue of great concern.
Well, thanks for laying that out. I know that's one in particular that really gets me a bit upset when I hear that our laws can be overturned by these nameless, faceless tribunals that are unanswerable to anybody, as far as I could tell, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Jessa, lay out for our audience, if you would, the campaign underway now to defeat TPP in the U.S. Congress. There's limited time for debate. And no amendments are permitted under the fast-track provisions that were adopted by Congress several months back.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, so the thing about the TPP is that, it really can't become a reality unless it gets through U.S. Congress. And really, the TPP's fate in Congress is highly uncertain. And it's going to be a huge fight. And we saw a preview of this, as you mentioned, during the fast-track fight earlier this year. So fast-track, as you mentioned, the provision which really limits Congress's role in the matters of trade and makes it so that they can't make any changes. They have limited time for debate. They can only vote up or down. So that just barely eked through the Congress. There was a huge, huge coalition of organizations. We're talking about all the major labor unions, environmental groups, human rights groups, faith groups, people concerned about access to medicines and internet freedoms, a number of local groups, from very tiny local groups down to some of the huge, huge groups were working together to fight against the fast track. And it was a very, very close fight, but actually now those organizations that were working on that issue have turned their attention to the TPP and are working to defeat the TPP. I mean, the other thing is that according to the timeline, so under fast track, Obama has to give 90 days notice before Congress can vote on the TPP. So the very earliest that the TPP could come to Congress would be in early 2016, which is right in the middle of the election season. And we don't expect that members of Congress are really going to want to take such a controversial vote during the election season. And in another kind of demonstration of how politically toxic this issue is, a number of presidential candidates are coming out against the TPP. Most notably, Hillary Clinton, after supporting the TPP as Secretary of State, has come out against the TPP. Also Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, and some other Republican presidential candidates expressing kind of skepticism as well. So it's very, very clear that there's going to be a huge fight, and it's the TPP's fate really is uncertain in U.S. Congress. So, I mean, it's really important for people that are, you know, concerned about the TPP. The fight is far, far from over. It's really important for everyone to contact their elected officials and just let them know that they should oppose the TPP.
Jessa Bonner is our guest, International Program Associate with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. We're talking about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. Jessa, what do we know about public opinion in the United States about this particular Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement that's being proposed here?
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, for a very, very, very long time, not very many people in the United States even knew what the TPP was. And in part, this was by design. As I mentioned, the negotiations were really happening in secret. There was not much being said about it. There was no, you know, real opportunity for citizens to kind of be involved. So for a long time, there was just not very much awareness. But specifically, over time, as things have kind of trickled out, as there's been some leaks, as well as through the fast track fight, awareness has really grown, and this has become kind of a very important center stage issue. So a lot of people are very, very skeptical in the U.S. of these kind of NAFTA-style trade agreements, and the TPP really is just a huge expansion of this NAFTA model of trade. So, I mean, we saw that through NAFTA, it was projected that there were going to be a huge number of jobs would be created, that was going to be good for people in all three of the countries, et cetera. But we've really seen in the first 10 years of NAFTA that nearly 1 million manufacturing jobs were lost. 1 in 4 manufacturing jobs were offshored. We haven't seen, you know, the creation of stable jobs in other countries as well, you know, the creation of a lot of very precarious jobs in Mexico, and some of those have even moved to cheaper places. So I think as people are finding out about the TPP and realizing that it's just an expansion of this NAFTA model, there's a lot of skepticism, and that comes from both sides of the aisle as well. I mean, a lot of Democrats expressing in the House, you know, talking about how jobs are going to be offshored, a lot of Republicans expressing concerns about sovereignty, et cetera. So, and given that, as I mentioned, the presidential candidates, you know, have been coming out against TPP, I think that's really kind of a barometer for how they're feeling the pressure from the voters, and they're feeling that there's a lot of opposition to this agreement.
Well, thanks for that, Jessa. Do we know if a majority of those being polled in recent public opinion polls are opposed, or is it kind of in flux at this point?
I think it's in flux. I think it's hard to say. There have been polls that have kind of, you know, that have absolutely said that have come showing that that the American public are really opposed to these kinds of NAFTA-style deals, but it's, you know, with the polls, sometimes it's hard because a lot of it just depends on how the questions are phrased, et cetera.
Right.
So I think it's difficult, but I think there's as awareness is growing, there's definitely a lot of opposition.
Well, Jessa, thanks for speaking with us tonight. And do leave our listeners with the web address for Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. People can get a lot more detail and commentary about the TPP there, right?
Yes, absolutely. So there's a lot of resources at our website at tradewatch.org. And then there's also a great website about the ISDS issue, which is at isdscorporateattacks.org. And then there's another great website about specifically about the access to medicines issue, with stories of patients telling, giving video testimonials about how the TPP would affect their ability to get access to medicine, and that's at tppkills.org.
tppkills.org. Okay, that's memorable. Thank you so much, Jessa. Appreciate you making time to be with us tonight.
Great. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. That's Jessa Bonner, International Program Associate with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch.